Everything Must Go. Written by Elapsed Spiral. Read by Tipsy Kitty. Fandom, our flag means death. Rarely, Mom would bring things back from the Carmody estate. A teacup with a missing handle and delicate flowers dotted around the rim. A chipped crystal inkwell that made rainbows dance along the walls. A piece of silk. Treasures turned into trash. None of it ever got fixed, or used, or sold. Just hidden carefully beneath the floorboards where Dad's rages wouldn't wreck them more. Ed had asked why once, and Mum's answer had felt wrong, but it still sunk into his bones. She was saving them for best, for a special occasion. After Dad died, after he killed Dad, things stayed tucked away where Ed couldn't wreck them, because best never came to houses like theirs. No amount of breakfast assembly, giving Blackbeard a burial at sea, or Steed doing his damnedest to rearrange Ed's fucking insides, shifts the feeling. A heavy ache that gnaws at his attention, and makes his barely recovered bones hurt all over again. Storm, but no storm. Calm, but not really. At first, Ed had chalked it up to the actual weather, because while he could read that better than any fucker, you did well to stay humble and vigilant about it. Except the clear skies stay clear, so it's not that. Then he'd figured it was some kind of omen about Ned fucking low, and that turned out to be wrong, too. Because the feeling's still there when he repositions the twine on the breakfast tray for a third time before stepping into the cabin. It's only when he's telling Steed about dying and how Steed brought him back, wrapped in Steed's robe and sitting on his bed with the world's worst breakfast hogging all the space between them, that Ed really gets what he's feeling. It's not weather, but time. It's a clock, and all he can hear, no matter how loudly Steed smiles, is ticking. They're barely off the ship before Jack finds a game of dice to lose money at. Then it's more shitty rum and a girl unenthusiastically promising to show him, or Ed, or both of them, a good time.
You know you don't have to spend it all at once,
he says, and Jack finds that hilarious.
What?
Jack laughs and bares his teeth like a wolf.
You got a special occasion you're saving for? Putting money aside for your fucking dowry or something?
Ed gets him in a headlock, and then it's his turn to laugh. Because Jack doesn't know what happened to the last person who had Ed's hands around their neck. Jack has a death wish a mile wide, though, so he might not even care. It's a funny thought to have, because no sooner has he thought it than Jack reads his mind and says,
"Not like you can take it with you."
Jack's wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about that. Ed takes out his money and immediately feels lighter. He watches the fishermen in the dock. He watches himself watching them, and imagines he has stakes in or opinions on any of it. The size of the catch, its quality, or the price it fetches. Crazy that he knows so little about that chit when he spent his life on the water. There's a lot he doesn't know, Ed knows now. It feels good, briefly. He's good at feeling briefly good in an ocean of otherwise feeling shit. Good at finding enough places to pause, just for a moment, before going back to paddling. So he watches the fishermen work, and while he's at it, he lets himself imagine everything slotting together. That he can be a person who has stakes in or opinions on fishing. Who can and wants to sit in silence with himself, whoever that is. And that guy, that Ed, has this gentleman-turned-rockstar boyfriend who... This gentleman-turned-rockstar boyfriend who kills people now, because of him. And that's the thing. Whenever Ed looks at any particular piece of the puzzle, the others slide away from him. They're like magnets he can't force closer, no matter how much he presses them together. He needs a plan. He always needs a fucking plan. But he can't figure out one that has all this inside it. But he already knows that. He's already accounted for it over tea and toast. It's why he's here at all. He asks the fishermen if they're hiring, even if he struggles to hear himself over the ticking in his ears.
Explain it again.
We're not going to do pirating anymore. Annie says, like he's stupid. He is, but this is simultaneously the most obvious thing he's ever heard, and the most impossible to grasp. Okay? He really thinks about it as he eyes their fucking luggage, they'd called it. But like, hang on. On purpose, Mary says, with less patience. That's what you're not getting. We're doing it on purpose. Why? Made her money? Want to get out before the whole thing goes bust. What would you do instead? Annie and Mary lock eyes and have one of their psychic exchanges. It'd melt him like a laser if he ever stood between them and bore the brunt of that devotion. It'd turn him into something softer than he is. Not sure yet. We'll figure something out, Annie says. We've got a broad skill set, haven't we, darling? Some of those skills would be more profitable than others, Mary leers. I'm sure there's a market for burying people alive. Wasn't what I meant, hun. I know it wasn't what you meant, Annie says. But I am ignoring you. Oh, you're ignoring me while you're fucking quoting me, are you? Ed feels the fucking laser charging up as they chew each other out. It feels warm and pulses with life. He wants to throw himself in front of it. He wants it to strike him down. But, he says again, and he's surprised they even hear him from inside their little bubble. I thought you were history's greatest tactician, Eddie, Mary sneers. Like he'd come up with that. It has is written all over it. You been on the rhino horn again? Ed can't fathom how you can opt out of a notion of feeling crap. How you can apparently find someone, grab their hand, and swim to shore instead. Annie takes pity on him and gives him a condescending pat on the arm as she buries him alive with her answer. Why? Because nothing lasts forever. It's not a great day. But isn't that always the way? You decide you're going to go out on a high, and then you try so hard, it winds up giving you a fucking hernia. Ed takes Steed to his favorite fish shack, and the food's as good as it ever is, and he's not stabbed by anyone, not even people who've earned the right to take a pot shot or two. And every time he looks at Steed, he feels like he's drifting. It gets worse at Jackie's. He considers leaving then, without a word. The cruelty in him gets a kick out of the idea, but the love in him sickens at it. He settles for the middle ground of leaving the bar to catch his breath. Steed finds him anyway. Steed comes back to him. He's happier now. This gentleman turned rock star turned killer. The man Ed loved so much, he broke him. His lunch sits heavy in his stomach. Curdles. You don't sound that happy, Steed says. And that's all it takes for the sickness to start spilling out of him. He feels how the space between them grows, but that's okay. He's paused for too long now, anyway. He's out of time. Ed watches himself tell Steed his news, and it's almost a relief, not having to force the pieces together again, now they're so far apart. Mum died years back. Ed wonders if anyone ever found what she'd hidden under the floorboards. If it had still been there to find. There's a lot of things he doesn't know, but he knows the answer to that. Best never comes to houses like theirs. The end.